Today's episode of The Grave Talks is brought to you by Best Fiends. Download Best Fiends free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Today on The Grave Talks, Spirits of Fernald, a conversation with Nick Graves. The Walter E. Fernald Developmental Center has a very dark past. A past shaded with sinister and unethical experimentation on developmentally disabled children. From eugenics to feeding children cereals laced with radioactive isotopes. Life inside this facility was not one of rehabilitation or care that it should have been. Today, the campus sits abandoned. A quiet and lonely reminder of a time that many would rather forget. But do the dark shadows of the past still linger in the halls of countless buildings that slowly rot away on this seemingly cursed plot of land? Today we learn about Fernald's spirits as we talk with paranormal investigator Nick Graves.
Yeah, it started up very, very early on. It was one of the first ones in the United States. It was originally built in Boston and then was moved to Waltham, which is where it resides now. It's completely abandoned. Just the things that they did over the years and stuff really caused their name to not be so good, even though they try to make positive changes later on. But they would essentially lock up anybody that had disabilities. And these could literally range from just coming from, you know, a poor family, not having anybody really that wants you to take care of you or whatever, to, you know, being blind or deaf or, you know, having mental disabilities and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Everybody would just, that had these undesirable traits, they would consider it and would lock them up into this place, which, this place is really, at fault, I feel, for a lot of things that kind of came about in our history. They actually helped to pass a bill very early on that essentially they kind of went along the ideals of like eugenics and things like that, where they were trying to essentially, like, in their mind, eradicate any of these human deficiencies by locking them into this place and essentially stopping them from multiplying. Mm-hmm. Stopping these people from breeding, to try and stop, I guess, these deficiencies and whatnot. And they treated these people terribly. I mean, as most of them did, just all sorts of experiments and, you know, things that they obviously, these people would not condone to. These people would not, you know, willingly say, hey, you know, you can go ahead and do this to me. So it was really against these people's wills as well. They would be locked up in really, really unfair, really cruel conditions, left to just basically sit there in their own filth for gosh, who knows how long. Anybody that tried to rebel or fight back, you know, even if they're like deaf or blind, you know, they know that there's really nothing wrong with them. They just have these small, you know, things that normal people wouldn't have to deal with. Mm-hmm. But I mean, by all senses, they're totally there. You know, they're with it. They're mentally, you know, completely sound. They are, you know, aware of everything that's happening to them. And, you know, if they would try to fight it or anything, they would get literally just strapped to a chair in that place and just left. And, you can sense a lot of this energy, like, just immediately, like, walking into this abandoned location. It's just, you can, like, feel it all around, like, eyes, almost, like, eyes on you. But, yeah, it was definitely not a fun place to be.
No, and it's so sad, I mean, to you know that this is how our society treated people with developmental disabilities for such a long period of time, well into the 20th century. I mean, this place, how late was it in operation until?
I believe, actually, until like the early 2000s, it finally got 100% shut down.
Wow.
They basically expanded and expanded and expanded over the years, trying to house, you know, tons and tons of people. Tuberculosis ran through, killed a ton of people. Eventually, you know, things start to try to lean more towards like a more progressive, you know, nature, where they're trying to start to actually understand disabilities and actually try to help these people. But by that point, it was, you know, maybe like 15, 16 people that were housed there, as opposed to like the thousands that were. And then eventually just, you know, history continued to catch up with them. They're still to this day fighting battles in court against people that were housed there and treated unfairly and cruelly up till even into the 80s and 90s. And they were actually running experiments on these children that were housed there, which was real.
And I have actually the Wikipedia article pulled up in front of me, and I want to talk about it, and I want to read some of these things in just a moment of what they did and who supported some of these horrible experiments that, you know, I guess if you look at it in some ways, shapes and forms, it's horribly scary to see what they did. But it's also coming from the prism of what we know to be good or bad in terms of modern medicine. A lot of it very bad now. But at one point in time, people were thinking that they were doing the right thing in some of these cases. I think that's important to look at. It's in no way to whitewash this and be like, oh, it was all good. But there was an element of this is the current modern medicine, whether it be in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, early 2000s, depending on the decade, whatever the modern thing was, people thought that they were, you know, doing what was right. I mean, I can't say with any confidence that the doctors or the researchers there, they weren't like evil scientists. I mean, correct? Or tell me that.
I mean, it's really tough to say. I'm sure there are doctors and stuff that went through some of these, you know, things that did have the purest of intentions and really did want to try to find a solution and stuff. But there were some that I would have to just say were definitely just using these people to, I guess, run their little experiments and stuff. And as far as being... I don't know, having the best intentions, I'd have to say it's hard to really put a finger on that.
Really?
Because some of the things they did outside of even, you know, some of those things like the just letting people sit in their filth.
Yeah, well, that obviously, yeah. I guess I'm talking more about like some of the medical, you know, practices and stuff with what they were looking at, especially like nuclear medicine research in children. Today we look at this and go, you did what? At the same time, though, half of our buildings were being built with asbestos and everything, too. So, it's the perspective that we have to look through things of like later we go, oh, this was a bad idea. But we had they did not know at that moment in time. At least I'm being too hopeful. Maybe I'm being too optimistic that people aren't inherently evil. But there's certainly bad things in everything. I just wonder how much of these people that were there were inherently bad and were looking at these people as not even people, and how many were looking at them as people and they thought they were doing what was right for them. Either way, so many people suffered horrendously. Give me some perspective as to who would be admitted to this place. How would they have been admitted to this location in its earlier years in the like 1900s up until, you know, the 50s, 60s in that area?
So originally it was basically people that would be brought there, you know, families that couldn't take care of their mentally disabled children or what have you. But then eventually they started to try to pass that bill that they passed, which was based on the ideals of eugenics. And it was, they at that point were allowed to forcibly put people into this place, which is what I thought was very wrong. They're making it to where, okay, now we can come and get you because we think you're undesirable and we can force you to be locked up here. And during the World War, actually, they went through the entire building and locked up anybody that was Japanese, Italian.
Oh, wow.
Anybody of those descents. Yeah, would lock them up against their will, even if they were staff. Even if they were staff, which is, that blew my mind when I was reading this stuff about this place.
Yeah.
You know, I'd already been like, you know, maybe two times. So now I'm like interested in the place. It was really active. Reading all this stuff, and I'm like, yeah, now I've just got to keep going back. Like, I want to see what this place was all about.
Wow. Okay, back to our conversation in just a moment. First, I want to thank our supporter today, Best Fiends. You have heard me talk about this many a times, about it kind of being a guilty pleasure, and it really is. But I don't feel really that guilty about it because it's fun. There's other things, you know, there's binging on television that I do feel guilty about. There's movies, there's music. But you know what? This one, the more I do it, the more I'm kind of like, you know what? This is good for me. It's good to have a little escape. And it's like brain exercise. Best Fiends, a mobile puzzle game. You will know what I'm talking about once you play it for yourself. It's a match 3 puzzle game like none other. Literally thousands of levels and new content added all the time. I've been playing it for a while. And yes, I'm a little obsessed. Maybe a lot. I do highly recommend you checking out because, like I said, it's refreshed all the time. There's new stuff in there all the time. You don't get bored with it. It's one of those things you can have for, I've been playing for a couple years now, and it's just always, always good. And it's fun. You can play with your friends. You can compare your scores. You can try and one up each other. Best Fiends, there's something new about it today, tomorrow, every day after that. Literally thousands of levels to play and counting, plus tons of cute characters to collect, so you never get tired of solving puzzles. And good news, Best Fiends, with Best Fiends, the fun does not end. Don't blame me if you get a little bit obsessed, though. Check it out for yourself. Download Best Fiends free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends. Okay, so I take all that back. It's much worse than I thought it was.
Yeah, you know, you keep reading and go down the rabbit hole and you're like, wow, this place was really insane.
Yeah, well, because like, you hear about, you know, places like this that were either, you know, mental health facilities or asylums and whatnot. And some you can look at and go, these people did have good intent, but it was the medicine, the practices were wrong because they didn't know any better. And some places you look at as you dig deeper and you go, these people did not have good intent. they were just messed up. And then in turn messed up so many other people. I mean, just to put it in perspective, as you're telling me these stories and as I'm reading more about what was going on with Walter E. Fernald, who Fernald being the namesake of the location, the big advocate for eugenics, the school viewed as a model education facility in the field of mental, and this is a term they used at the time, mental retardation, obviously not used anymore. It was renamed in his honor in 1925 following his death the previous year. The institution was involved in several different procedures that used the residents as test subjects, some of which include sterilization and radiation experimentation. And that radiation experimentation, that's scary. When I'm looking at this, and here's this to put it in perspective for the audience, and then we can start jumping into hearing more about what you discovered as you started to dig into this. The Fernald School was the site of the 1946 to 53 joint experiments by Harvard University and MIT. So this isn't just like Joe Blow found how to get some nuclear or some radioactive shit out of Arizona deserts and then, you know, bring it in here to experiment with. This is funded by Harvard and MIT. It exposed young male children to tracer doses of radioactive isotopes. Documents obtained in 1994 by the United States Department of Energy revealed these details. The experiments were conducted in part and sponsored by, this is disturbing, the Quaker Oats Company.
So there it is.
So I'm just picturing Wilford Brimley in there experimenting with children and radioactivity, which is, I'm sure it's not true.
I'd hope not.
Or the Quaker Oats Man on the actual box, literally the Quaker Oats Man. MIT professor of nutrition Robert S. Harris led the experiment, which studied the absorption of calcium and iron. The boys were encouraged to join a science club, which offered large portions of food, parties and trips to the Boston Red Sox baseball games. So they bribed them essentially by going to baseball games to be part of this club where they could poison them with radioactive isotopes. They ate iron-enriched cereals and calcium-enriched milk for breakfast in order to track absorption. Several radioactive calcium tracers were given orally or intravenously. In another study, 17 subjects received iron supplement shots containing radioisotopes of iron. Neither the children nor their parents gave adequate informed consent for participation in the study. So this is this is why we have parent sign-off sheets today. It's because somebody discovered their children were going to baseball games and then being fed radiation cereal. It's like, what? These Frosted Flakes just taste a little different. I don't know why. They glow in the dark. I mean, Jesus.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just... it's so disturbing. The school also participated in studies of thyroid function in patients with Down syndromes and their parents. The study showed that the iodine metabolism was similar to normal controls. Wow. I mean, just wow.
There's court cases to back all that.
Yeah. And it goes on. I mean, there's lawsuits that still look like they go on almost to this day, well into the 2010s. In November 2020, the site became home to the Greater Boston. Okay, that's out of this. But my goodness, just horrific. So how did you first hear about this location? And what, when you started digging, what were some of the things that really stood out to you as disturbing beyond what we just talked about?
Actually, we went to go see the asylum up there in Waltham that was inspiration for the American Horror Story Asylum series. Mm-hmm. And just so happened that this Fernald place was literally right down the street. And so we just kind of stumbled upon it. And then we, you know, went and explored it one time. And it was like one of the more active places that we had ever been to. Like, it was just some really crazy responses and stuff in the place. And so we were just really driven to come back. And then, you know, after the second time, similar experiences to the first time, I was like, yeah, I've got to get the history on this place. And it's just such a massive, like, there's like 50 plus buildings stretched across like miles of grounds.
So when you went there the first time, it was just kind of on a whim. Did you know any of the history when you first set foot on the property?
No, basically when we first got there, we kind of looked it up just to see where we were. And we knew that it was like a mental hospital. It's kind of what it was described as online. And that was really all that we knew about it walking into it. So we just kind of went in blind, honestly, for like the first two times.
What was it like? I mean, okay, so not having the perspective or the context rather of what went on here. What were you feeling? What was it like setting foot onto that property?
Oh man. It just seems like really active. You can almost like envision, you know, like kind of like the bustle, when you walk in there, but there's just, it's constant like sounds and stuff. It's really unsettling. You can literally be standing there in silence and just hear like footsteps walking and shuffling up and down the halls and stuff. It's really quite intriguing.
That active.
What's that?
That active. Where is it? One of those locations where you could almost, as much as a guarantee as anyone could make on this subject, but you could almost guarantee someone, you go in there, you're going to have an experience of some sort?
Oh, I could almost guarantee it. Yeah, you spend enough time there. you sit and you listen, run some experiments and stuff. You're gonna definitely have some experiences there. I've never left that place without having an experience where I was like, wow, that was really something, you know. Like the knock response, I was in one of the cafeterias. I think it was like the second time we went, and it was like this big massive cafeteria, and we heard like shuffling and walking like all through, you know, the back side of the kitchen, like off in like the freezer areas. And I was like, you know, if there's someone back there, could you give me two knocks? And literally within a moment, within an instant, it was almost immediate. Two knocks, bang, bang, against like, it sounded like a freezer door. And it was just like, wow, you know. Through the Ovilus, we asked to have, you know, if anybody was there, give us the name of the person that built the school. You know, first or last name will suffice. And literally a minute later, Walter's name comes through the obvious. It's just, it's remarkable. Just like the responses that you get, it's almost instant and direct. It's very, very intelligent. Like all the spirits there are intelligent. Even though you would assume, you know, because people that were, you know, technically feeble minded, were locked up there, that wouldn't be the case, but it's couldn't be farther from the truth. To be completely honest, it's one of the best locations that I've ever been to as far as getting intelligent responses.
When someone was admitted there, and I say that word lightly because we think admitted the way that things are done today, obviously not so much. They're forced to be there beyond their control is probably more so, you know, what it was, whether they should be there or not. When someone was admitted to this location, is this a place where they would end up staying essentially the rest of their lives?
It seemed as such, for the most part. Yeah. And, I mean, there's really no guarantee, you know, how long your life there really was even going to be, to be completely honest. And they'd had, you know, people like murder each other and stuff like that there because they really weren't cared for. If you weren't left like literally to sit there in your filth, you were basically allowed to just kind of get away with whatever. There's actually there's a very famous murder that happened there, like the murder of the 17th, I believe it's called, where like for a very good long time, I believe it was even a couple of years, they essentially just brushed off this girl's death. Because they just considered it, okay, well, an undesirable person is gone and dead, you know.
Yeah.
So be it. You know, they really just brushed it under the rug until, you know, people that did care about her continued to try to kind of get information and stuff like that. And they finally found out who did it and all that. And it finally got solved and stuff. And it just kind of went to show, I think, those people that were running these facilities that, yes, you might consider them undesirable, but they probably do have people that care about them, regardless of how you feel about them. They sure. still have family. We still have people that care about them. You know, they are people.
The when you look at facilities in this vein, we look way back and for long periods of time, the practices that were done were just unthinkable. But the ones that still eventually lasted into the 90s, into the early 2000s and such, oftentimes there had been a lot of reform. And a lot of times these facilities were nothing like other than in shape and physicality in those locations, what they had been 40, 50, 60, 70 or more years ago. Did this location into its later days, what had there been reform there? Had things improved to a higher standard? One would almost think they would had to have to stay in business, you know, up until, you know, less than 20 years ago.
I mean, it would really be hard to say, but at the same time, I would have to say that they're probably, I mean, obviously they make huge, big changes, you know, not forcing people to sit there in their filth and stuff like that anymore. Yeah. Like, you know, they did make big positive changes and try to kind of fix their name a little bit. But if you're even into like the 90s and stuff, feeding radioactive oatmeal to children, and you're still into 2021 fighting court cases on things that you've done to people that are still alive, I'd have to say that you didn't change enough, at the very least. You didn't change enough.
And that's just disturbing. I mean, just to hear what was going on. I think so many times we look at stories and we hear these stories and we think, well, that was even before I was born. That was in a different lifetime. That was a different place in time. But then you start going, oh, crap. Like, I remember what I was doing when this would have been going on. You know, it's like, and that's where it puts things into perspective. And even further, you look back and go, well, that really wasn't that much further before my time of what people had found to be acceptable in terms of this. When you look back on this and the research that you've done and the individuals that you've talked to, how far back to your knowledge do the first accounts of paranormal activity in this specific location go back? Imagining that this place is open into the early 2000s, I would have to guess employees, patients, people visiting, I would think there would have been something going on even into that point as a reflection of the past 100 years of its operation.
Oh, I'd imagine you're absolutely right. I mean, like right from the get-go, they were doing things that were traumatic, you know, basically creating a stain on, you know, the energy that's there, which I feel always is indicative of creating some sort of, you know, some sort of occurrences. You know, when there's that much negative energy, there's almost always something happening there. But I honestly, I haven't really found anything as far as like paranormal, you know, like anything for this place. It's not a place that's really super out there, I guess, as far as like being explored and investigations being done and stuff, which is another thing that we actually found quite interesting, because a lot of times there's so much suggestion walking into a place. Like, so many people have had so many experiences. It was cool walking into a place that really didn't have anything written down.
Yeah.
You know, but I would love to talk to, you know, if I could just pick someone's brain that was there, you know, for a minute, that would be remarkable. I would love to hear some of the things that they've got to say, some of their experiences.
Yeah. It's almost like the horror of what was just going on with the living, maybe it just, you know, it just outnumbered or was much louder than what was going on now that the halls are quiet and these things can be picked up upon. So tell me more about getting into this building, learning about it, and some of your experiences there, some of the more standout experiences that you've had. Walk us through some of those experiences in detail.
All right. I'll start with the church, because that's like really where our exploration kind of started. We came about the place like through the woods, ended up at like, I guess, kind of like the far back side of the property. And like the first building that we happened upon was like an old abandoned church. So we walked inside and pretty much everything is still there. Like the organs are there, like they're all destroyed and stuff. People went in and, you know, vandalized the place and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, the organs are there, the pews are all there, the big cross is still up on the wall. You know, the podium is still there, like the priest's like chair that he would sit in with like the nice, you know, velvet and stuff all over it is all still there. It was really, really neat just kind of taking that all in. That was like almost like awe striking. Mm-hmm. But right from the get go, immediate like just activity, you know, you just get like the hair standing up on the back of your neck. We did a couple spirit box sessions with just like really, really clear responses. He was actually sitting in a confessional, my cousin Brad, at one point. This is the next time that we went, but we went back to the church, and he's sitting in the confessional and he's doing a spirit box, and clear as day, it sounded like a, you know, like a priest or a pastor or something giving like a sermon or a service, and literally said, "Let us walk with God." And it was just so clear and so just vivid. We actually have it on camera and everything. It's just like one of my favorite clips, like still to this day. It's just so clear. It was just mind blowing.
So it sounded like the priest was saying, "Let us walk with God," like he was giving a sermon.
Yeah, it was so clear too. It was probably one of the more like class A spirit box responses I've ever heard. It was just, it literally rang through the church. It was so loud.
Wow.
It was remarkable.
Yeah. I mean, is this something that you heard in reviewing the audio, or is this something that you were able to pick up in real time?
Oh, heard it in real time.
Oh my God. Wow.
Oh yeah. It like sent shivers, like goosebumps through my whole body.
I mean,
it was so weird.
One, you know, when you have an experience like that, I guess, you know, from the living, in many cases, you feel, okay, well, this is, you know, this is a pastor, this is a priest, you know, hopefully they're a good one. I can't say the word priest and always be like, oh, they're lovely people. You know, you hope for the best. Assuming it's not one of the bad ones, and you think, okay, well, that's good. This is not, you know, something evil or bad, hopefully. But what's going through your mind? What sort of feeling are you getting? What sort of vibe are you getting other than it's spooky? But are you getting any, are you feeling like this is in fact the spirit of the priest that's doing it, residual or is conscious or what the hell are you thinking you're experiencing at that moment?
Well, I had already had a experience in that church with, it was what we kind of believe to be a negative entity. And have had multiple experiences with what we believe to be this one particular entity in that church. It likes to scratch and stuff like that. It's kind of crazy. But I at that moment when I heard that, felt honestly reassured. It was like kind of like a calming feeling. It was really, really, you know, profound. It gave me the chills and like the shivers and stuff. But I felt reassured, almost as though there was that priest still there kind of watching over, you know, his church, and was like, you know, I'm not going to let anything happen to these people. You know, we'll walk together, you know, and you won't be harmed. And that's how I kind of felt about it. I felt very reassured in that moment.
Okay. So you were getting the vibe that he's there and he's trying to protect you from something. Tell me about this entity that you found or had interactions with that didn't seem to have such good intent, more malevolent intent, scratching, things of that nature. That's not necessarily what you would expect to find, I guess, in a church or think you would find in a location like that.
Yeah, that was intriguing to me. There was this weird crawl space, like hole. You could get to like this balcony in the church, and up in like this closet up in the balcony, there's like this hole that leads to like an attic almost, mm-hmm. like type crawl space. And, you know, just being curious, I kind of poked my head up there and reached a K2, you know, up into the little space and stuff like that. And, you know, it just sat there kind of flat for a while. It wasn't really doing anything. And, you know, I'm just sitting there kind of like talking, and, the K2 all of a sudden out of nowhere went full red, which doesn't happen very often at all. And it just went full red. And I was like, oh, whoa, you know, kind of taken aback. And now I'm just real steady and felt this crazy gush of just the coldest, most frigid air just blast through this hole right at me. And it knocked me off the chair and everything that I was standing on. And at that moment, I was like, yeah, I'm good. I'm going to go back down to the stage where, you know, my cousin's at, and I'm going to go hang out with him for a little bit. I'm done my solo trip, you know, and I was standing next to him, and this was literally just as soon as I finally got back down to the stage, I could hear and feel like scratching like on my jean jacket. And I was like, did you hear that, man? He was like, no, I didn't hear anything, blah, 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 what? And I was like, oh, nothing, you know, just kind of brushed it off. And then a couple moments later, I could actually feel the scratching like through my jacket and could hear it really, really loud. And I was like, did you hear that? And he's like, yeah, what was that? And we actually caught it on camera and everything, that you could very clearly hear like long nails on a jean jacket. It was just really odd. And I felt very unsettled. We went to another building and had these little vibration lights. They go off like to like vibration, or if you like pick them up or touch them. They're cat toys. So they just work to basically them being batted around. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to talk through Spirit Box and had one of those lights set up as well. And the light had gone off like right next to me. And then Brad had asked if it was something following me from the church, and it immediately lit back up again. And at that moment, I was like, okay, now I'm a little uncomfortable. There was definitely something that I experienced over there in the church, and now it's following me. Like, I'm going to have to deal with this before I go home. You know, I'm not taking this guy with me. No way. You know, so the second time that I went and, you know, had that in the back of my mind, you know, that there's something odd in this place for sure, in this building in particular. Hearing that priest, while that's in the back of my mind, say, you know, let us walk with God, that's why I felt like it was reassuring for me at that moment, where he's like, don't worry about it. You know, you're going to be all right. You got the right, you know, got the right attitude about it, and you'll be able to just keep on walking through, you know. So that was kind of a nice moment.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Nick Graves. In part two, what is it that Nick found in the church on the Fernald property that seems to have evil intent? Are there negative entities that reside on the campus of the facility? Is it possible to confuse a negative entity for a confused entity that still suffers from their disabilities, even in the afterlife? Do the former residents haunt this facility, or the spirits who linger there, are they things that feed off the former residents' pain and anguish? Why would conscious spirits choose to reside there in a location with such a dark history? Or do they have a choice? And what is the campus like today? And what does the future hold for it? All of that and more in part two of our conversation with Nick Graves. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. You sign up at thegravetalks.com. Click Become a Gravekeeper or go directly to patreon.com/thegravetalks. $5 a month gets you access to all of our bonus content, part one and part two of our interviews, advanced episodes of the show, and it's all commercial free. Again, patreon.com/thegravetalks to get it all. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.